Hey everybody, welcome to our Introduction to Node Development with Bot Framework. In this video, we'll be giving you a general overview of Node.js, what it is, how to use it, and also a few examples using Bot Framework. My name is Nafiz Zaman. I'm a software engineer here at Microsoft in TED.
And I'm Etienne Margave. I'm also a software engineer in TED at Microsoft Corp. And we're going to talk to you about, in this session, about Node.js. And as you just said, Nafis, it's going to be about, first, why you would want to use Node.js, why it is a good idea, and why you would go in that way. And then we're going through a lot of different demos and explanation of the simple stuff, how you do simple stuff, how you do more complex code, and how you can achieve advanced development tool there. And then we're going to give you a list of resources and other technologies or languages that you can go and have a look at to be better at Node.js or to be able to write more advanced code. So first, what is Node.js and why using it? So if you never heard of that, that can be weird at first. And it's always good to have a basic idea of where it comes from, new technology when you want to use it. And so so let's first talk about JavaScript. JavaScript was created first to be able to run inside a browser. And it was really slow. The idea was to be able to have some validation on the client side. For instance, you could validate a string is a password, or not a password, but a mail, for instance, and check that on the client side before sending that to the server. So it was really meant to be used in really simple cases. and it was slow because it was not compiled and everything. And then when Google created Chrome, and then all the browser after that did optimization there too, they created the V8 engine, JavaScript engine, which was really faster than the previous one, really, really, really faster than the previous ones. And at that specific time, someone or a team, a group of people, decided to use this V8 engine and create Node.js out of it to be able to run JavaScript outside of the browser. And the idea is mainly to write some JavaScript code, and then it's going to be executed as really a, like an executable on your computer, like an .exe file or something like this. The only thing that you have to do, you can see that on the screen, we're going to demo that obviously also, but you just have to launch the node .exe, and then, or the node binary, and give it a file that is going to interpret and run. So you can really create something that is running on the any computer, because it's cross-platform. It works on Windows, on Linux, on Mac, etc. And it was first created to be able to develop and code fast web APIs. So that was the main purpose. But you can do really much using this technology. So it's it was first created for server-side code. So you can think of web APIs or websites or really thing like this. And it's in an area where you have a lot of languages and technologies right now. So you have older one like PHP or Java or .NET. .NET is not really an old one here because we talk about .NET Core, which is really new and really competing against Node.js correctly in the performance point of view. But you also have Python, Ruby, and Go, which is new. But that's what you will have around Node.js in the same area. So if we believe him, because that's he's the guy who's running the Node.js Foundation, so we have to take his word. But Node.js is the fastest growing ecosystem in the world. And to have a picture of this, you can see here in the graph that NPM, which is the package manager for Node.js, has really, really a huge growth. So you can see here, it's the green line that I'm following with my mouse. There, it's the number of packages available on it. And there is really a lot of them. And it's really more that it doubles the one just before it. So it's really that represents that there is a lot of a big community around around Node.js and the packages for Node.js. So a few numbers that you can read here. The first important fact is that there is a big foundation behind Node.js right now, which in which you can find Microsoft, IBM, Intel, and all the, those big companies. And it's like, that's pretty much like what you have behind the W3C for the front part, but on the server-side part of JavaScript. And you have impressive numbers like the number of downloads per for each modules per day, which is 79 million. Then the number of download per month that you have for Node.js, which is also a few millions, and the number of modules, etc. And what is great is that it's not only used for open source or small project like student project. It's used in real cases, and you have here three examples of that. That's three companies that came from Java backend and moved to Node.js. And there is a huge impact on performances. For Netflix, it even impacted their whole system boot time, the time it takes for everything to be ready when they start from scratch. And most of the time, that reduced latency or the page load time and great stuff like this. And it's used by a lot of different companies like Uber, LinkedIn, etc. that you can read here on this slide. So I told you that Node.js was mainly created to run on the server, but you can also run that on the client side, the client parts. If you've already created a Cordova app, and you can recognize here the logo maybe if you did that, it's a mobile application that's running on a mobile, on a phone, and it's using Node.js code. That's the same for Electron, and we are going to use a lot an Electron app during this presentation, which is Visual Studio Code. So it's stuff written in JavaScript running on the desktop. And you can also run JavaScript on IoT devices using Node.js too. So that's really not only for the server. And here is the whole ecosystem of all the application that you have. Slack, for instance, is an example of that. And I was talking to you about that, but Visual Studio Code is written also using Electron. So to be able to start writing code, you have to install some stuff, but that's not really a lot of them. It's really, really easy to do that. The first step is to go to the Node.js.org website, in which you will have an installer for every platform that it can run in or onto. And so I use the Windows one. Once you have done that, it's installing two stuff. The first one is the tool for running Node apps that we're going to use in command line, and also the NPM tool, which is used to get modules and libraries for Node. And then you have to use a code editor, and you can use Visual Studio Code. We're going to show you why it's a good idea to do that. Once you have this, you're ready to go. You're set up. You just have to start your namespace, your workspace. You can do that by creating manually a package.json file, or you can use the command line, which is npm init, and then start writing code. So I'm going to show you how that works. So I'm in the command prompt of Windows here, and I am in my workspace folder where I have all my projects. So if I hit there, I can see all my projects. And I'm going to go in the my first app folder, which is, so it's not this one, it's this one. It's an empty folder, so there is nothing in it. And I'm going to use the npm init command. And that's going to initialize the workspace. And initializing a workspace in Node.js means to create the package.json file. And so it's going to ask me for the name of the app. By default, it's the folder where I'm currently in. The version, I'm going to keep everything by default. You can put a description here. You can say what's going to be the entry point of your Node app. I'm going to call that app.js. Then you can have a test command if you want to. You can specify the Git repository where it's going to be left, so people can go and find the original code for it. You can have keywords to help people search that. You can add an author. I'm going to put Etienne here. And you're going to have a license, et cetera. It's not really important to have the correct values right now because it's specified in the file, which is this one. And you can just change that later. So that's not really an issue. And then I'm going to start code in the current folder, so code dot. It's going to start my Visual Studio Code. And here, I'm going to zoom a little bit. Yes. And so in the package.json, I have a JSON. A serialized JSON object in which I find everything that I specified in command line, like the main file, the name of the app, the author, etc. And I can change that later if I want to. So then I will have to create the app.js file, and then I can just start and write some JavaScript code. So I'm going to declare a variable which is going to be hello, in which I will have hello all, for instance. That's okay. And then I'm going to use console.log, which is usually we use that on the front side, but here it's redirected to the console where the app is running, and so we can have access to this. And I can run that in command line and just say node app. It's going to find the file, run it, and here just showing me on the console. So usually, you don't want to do only that. You can do like command application if you want to do something on files locally and stuff like this. But usually, you want to host a website there or an API. So I'm going to use a module, which is the HTTP module. And the idea behind modules is that it's pretty much like libraries that you can use. And there is some code that is already written for you, so you don't have to do that. And you can just use them. You have some by default, or you can install new ones. And Nafis, you're going to talk to us about that later.
Yep.
So if I just go there, though I have required and import, that's pretty much the same as import my module, I can use it. I can say HTTP. I'm going to store that in a variable, which is going to be name server. HTTP.createServer. And then the only argument that I have to give to that function is a function. So it's going to be the callback. I'm going to talk to you about that. So request here, then response. And I'm going to give. So that's a function. So the idea is that here I'm creating a server. And once it's going to be to listen, it's going to start listening to queries that arrives. Every request that the user does is going to be handled by this function. And you have two parameters, the request and the response. And you can use a request to get some information. So here, we are going to create an answer. So var answer equals, going to use the same variable as before, hello. And then add a dot to make it look good. And then we are going to precise like you used this query. Like this, and I'm going to use request. And in a request, you have everything that is related to the request that is going into the server. And here is the URL, so pretty much everything that is after the server name. And then I'm going to send that back to the user. So it's going to be response.end, and just giving the string here, like this. And I can also, using the response, I can set the HTTP error message if I want, or error number, and everything like that. Then I just have to specify a port. So I'm going to create a port variable, which is going to be 8080 in this case. And then I just have to start to ask my server to start listening to some messages and use this port. And so then that's a good idea to do that usually, to say, to give a feedback to the developer and say, here, server is listening, using port and the port number, so I know if I change something that something might going wrong because of that. And everything seems to be good, I think, and so I can start that. I can start it, and I'm going to do that first using this, so I can do exactly the same as before. I'm going to say, okay, I'm listening using this port, and then I can start a browser and start doing something like this, browsing there, and it's going to ask to give that request to the node server and get me the answer. And something is not working correctly. Is it started or maybe not? No, it's not started. That's because, oh, I missed S here. So it can be a reason why you want to use TypeScript, for instance. So server is listening now, should be working okay. Every time I do this demo, it fails, so it's too easy, that's why. Hello all, use this query. And so the this query here is something that you can get on the that you have here, I showed you, just there, the request.url. And to see the value of this, what we can do is stop here and start using the debugger that is integrated to VS Code that you can use for Node.js. To do that, the first time you just hit F5, and it's going to ask you what is the kind of code you want to debug. I'm going to say it's Node.js, kind of guessed that already. And then I will just specify the file. It guessed that it's app.js. I think it used dpackage.json to know that. And when it's done, you can specify a lot of different stuff here, like what's going to be the environment variable and everything like this. And then I can hit F5 again. And it's going to start and give me the console here, as if I've run that outside of the VS Code. And I can then put a breakpoint inside of my code. So I can go there, app.js. I can say here, I want to stop every time we hit this specific code. And then I'm going to do that. So I'll be here and put something there. Like you can have in real world API, like something like ID.20, something like this. And it's going to stop here. And I have everything that you would expect from a debugging experience. You have local variables with their values. You have the call stack. You have all the breakpoints that you set, you can add watches, and you can also have access to the real-time value and everything. And you can do step-by-step like this and see that everything is changing. And so you can understand what is happening here. And here you can see that the URL is actually the one that is specified after the server. And then you can really understand where a bug might be coming from in your code. Back to the slide, so you saw how really easy it is to start creating some code in JavaScript, but it can be more complicated and you can do some more advanced stuff, and Nafis, you're going to talk to us about that.
Yep. So what Etienne showed with setting up a web server using the HTTP module, that's great, and that works fine, but in most of your projects, you want to use other libraries and SDKs to make your job easier and do more with less code. So the SDK we're going to demonstrate is called Bot Framework. So before we get into the code, let's take a second to talk about what Bot Framework actually is. In general, bots are conversational agents that users can talk to perform different tasks. This can be anything from booking flights or seeing what's going on this weekend. And bots are a more natural way of interacting with computers than the interfaces that we're used to. And they're really gaining popularity largely because they're very pervasive. They live where users already live. So users can interact with these bots through Facebook Messenger, through Skype, through Microsoft Teams, or even SMS and email. Now, if you wanted to make one of these bots from scratch, it would be pretty difficult. And that's where Bot Framework comes in. Bot Framework is Microsoft's platform for developing bots and publishing them for the public to use. The cool thing about Bot Framework is that it handles a lot of the issues that developers run into when they're writing bots, a lot of the common issues like how do I manage my dialogues, how do I keep track of state, and all the channel specific logic that comes into play when you want your bot to run on so many different channels. You can use Bot Framework in C# or Node. Of course, we'll be doing it in Node. And when we're using the Node SDK, we can get it through the Node, the package manager for Node called npm. So let's get into the code now. So I've switched into Visual Studio Code here, and I have a folder open called HelloBot, and it's mostly empty. You'll see a few files here just because I have it connected already to a GitHub repo. And I've also run npm init also, as Etienne showed before, and so I have my package.json file, just a default one that I went through the npm init wizard and created that for me. So let's go ahead and create a file. Our main file, I've called it server.js instead of app.js. And in bot framework, all bots are just web services. So the first thing we'll want to do is set up this web service. We'll use something called Restify to do that. And Restify is a Node module that's popular for creating REST APIs really easily. So in order to use Restify, we can do that similar to how we used HTTP before. So we'll call require and say require Restify. Now, let's see what happens if we just run this one line. So I'm going to use the built-in terminal to Visual Studio Code, and I'll run node server.js. And node is going to give me an error. It's going to say that it can't find the module Restify. This is because Restify, unlike HTTP, Restify is not a built-in module. It's a third party. It's a external module that we need to install first. And we can do that using the npm install command. So in the terminal, I'll do npm install and the name of the module, which is Restify in this case. And I'm also going to add a save flag. And I'll explain what that does in a second. So if I run this, it's going to go out and find the module I specified, Restify, and install it. And if you see, this folder popped up called node modules. This is where all of our modules will be installed to. And once that finishes, let's go ahead and expand this. And you'll see a lot of folders here now. If we scroll way down, you'll see Restify, the module we actually wanted, is here. All of these others are dependencies of Restify. And so it's downloaded, it's installed not only Restify, but all of its dependencies as well. Also, if we look in our package.json, we'll see a section that we didn't have before called dependencies. npm install has actually added this for us because we specified the save flag. So the dependency section will list all of your project's dependencies. In this case, we only have Restify so far, so it's added this one line for us with the name of the module and then the version. The main benefit of doing this is, say you were to put your code on source control like we'll do, or share it with other people, you don't want to give them this whole node modules folder. And you also don't want them to have to type npm install Restify and npm install whatever other modules you're using. You could be using 15, 20 different modules. You don't want them to have to do that. So instead, and to demonstrate this, I'm actually going to delete the node modules folder as if we hadn't run npm install. But I'll keep this dependency section. So instead, what someone could do is, after they have their project, they can just run npm install without the name, without any module names. And npm install by itself will go to your package.json, look in that dependency section, and install all the appropriate dependencies into your node modules. So once this is finished, we should be able to go into our node modules folder and see that it has the same modules that we saw before.
Cool.
This is a really convenient way of specifying the modules that you're using. One other thing to note in the package.json, you'll see this little caret symbol in front of the version. That's basically saying that we don't necessarily want exactly 4.3.0. We're allowing it to get a newer version if there's one available. So you'll see the caret means that it'll match the most recent major version, but for the minor version and the patch number, we're flexible on those. So it'll just download 4.x.x. If we want to be a little more strict, we could do a tilde, and the tilde will be 4.3.x. Or if we want exactly 4.3.0, we can just have no characters and just do 4.3.0. With the save flag, the default is the caret, and so we'll leave that as the default. So now that we have Restify, we can actually use it to set up a server. So we'll do that by saying create a variable called server and call restify.createServer. And it doesn't take any parameters. And then we'll make the server listen on a certain port. So I'm going to listen on port 3978. And we also give the listen function a callback function. The purpose of this is, after listen has actually finished doing its setup and it's finally listening, we can execute some other code after that's done. So we don't have to do anything here, but just so that we know the server has started, let's log a message using console.log. And we'll just say the server name is listening to a certain port. So we'll put the name and the URL, which will give us the port that we're listening on. So that's enough to set up our server. The next thing we'll do is bring in the bot framework SDK called Bot Builder. So I'll do a similar thing where I say require Bot Builder. And again, I'll come down here and say npm install with the save flag Bot Builder. And just to show you what that does to the package.json, right now we just have this Restify line. But once that's done installing Bot Builder, we should see another line pop up for Bot Builder with its appropriate version.
Which is great is that you don't have to share the node module folder. So you save a lot of space in GitHub or anywhere you put your code.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And you don't have to force a certain version of the modules onto people. They can run npm install and it'll get the proper versions for them. So you can see Bot Builder now has an entry in the dependency section. Now we're ready to use Bot Builder to actually create our bot. So in Bot Framework, we use what's called a connector to connect your bot to specific channels. So let's go ahead and make a new connector first. And we'll use the chat connector. Bot Builder also has a console connector if you want to talk to your bot using the console, but we want to actually use real channels, so we'll use the chat connector. And the chat connector takes a parameter, which is an object with a few different options. The ones we'll be concerned about are app ID and app password, which are essentially your bot's ID and your bot's password. These are important for when you publish your bot and when you use it on different channels, but for now, let's just set these to null and we'll come back to them. Now that we have our connector set up, let's create our actual bot. So this is called a universal bot in Bot Framework, and we want to hook up our bot to the connector we just created, so I'll pass the connector as a parameter. Now that we have our server and bot both ready, we want to actually connect the two somehow so that messages that come to our server are handled by the bot. And so we want to handle all of Bot Framework's messages using the bot we just created. So we'll tell our server using the post function that any messages that come onto the route /API/messages should be handled by Bot Framework. So we could put our own function here to handle those messages, but since we want Bot Framework to do it, we'll use a hook that it provides by doing connector.listen. And that's all we need to set up our bot to listen on the server. The final piece we need to do is actually define our bot logic. So when a user sends a message, what should we do with that message, and what messages should our bot send back as a response? We do that by defining the root dialog. You can read more about dialogs in the Bot Framework documentation, but just to give you an idea, dialogs you can think of as modular parts of your conversation, so sub-conversations. Every bot has to have at least one dialog, which is the root dialog, and we can register that by calling bot.dialog and giving it the name of the dialog, which for the root dialog you just use slash. Mm-hmm. And the second parameter is the function that will actually handle that message. So we'll give it a callback function. And this function we'll get one parameter called session. The session object in Bot Framework gives you a convenient way to send messages, to end the current dialogue that you're in, or begin a new dialogue. For our really simple bot, all we want to do is send a hello world message to the user. So we'll call session.send, which just takes a string for the message we want to send. So we'll say hello world. And that's all our bot should do. So any messages that come in to the root dialog, we'll just send hello world and be done. And that's all we have to do to define our bot. So now if we go down to the terminal and run server.js, we get a message saying that Restify is listening to port 3978. And that message is coming from line 7 here, where we said after it's done listening, print this message. So now we know our server is listening. I'm going to switch over to the bot emulator, which comes with Bot Framework as a way to really easily test your bots running locally. So you can see I've put the URL in here with the correct port and the route to /API/messages. So if I send a message here and I say hello, we get a message back saying hello world. And of course, it doesn't matter what I say here because my bot will just say hello world no matter what I say.
It's a really simple friend.
It's very simple. it just tells you hello over and over. But that's fine. You can see that in a very short, not many lines of code, we were able to set up a server, connect the bot to it, and have it running locally.
And yes, that's what is great with the community that you have in NPM and everything in Node.js. You have people from Microsoft, but for all everywhere around the world, it's creating those kind of modules that you can use, and that's really, really awesome.
Yep, and we saw earlier when you showed how fast this Node community has grown over time, and the number of modules is just—it's insane. So we got our bot running locally. Eventually, you'll want to run it on some kind of cloud service like Azure, so that other people can access it as well. So let's see how we can do that. I'm going to switch over to the Azure portal. Well, let's stop our bot first. I'm going to switch over to the Azure portal and show you how you can create a new web app to deploy your bot to. So I'm going to go to New and Web and Mobile, select Web App. And you can give your app a name, like Hello Bot Sample. It's going to be mad at me because I already have a Hello Bot Sample, but that's OK. Choose your subscription and your resource group. You can make a new one if you don't have one already. And choose your make a new app service plan if you need. I already have one created, so I'm just going to use that one. And then you'd want to hit Create. I already have this deployed, so I'm not going to hit Create. But once you hit Create and it deploys, you will get a web app. Mine is called Hello Bot Sample. Not available. Let's see. Should be available. Yeah. So we should be good. All right. Now we have our code here. Let's go ahead and push that onto GitHub. Before we do that, remember we had the app ID and app password is just null. Mm-hmm. We want to actually set those now. But you don't want to put things such as a bot password in your source code itself. So I'm going to use environment variables to keep this out of the source code. You can access environment variables from Node by using process.env and then .whatever environment variable you want. So I'm going to use Microsoft App ID. Make sure I spelled that right. Yep. And for the password, I'll do similar thing and do Microsoft App password. So I need to make sure these are actually set in my environment. In this case, I'm going to run this on Azure, so we'll see how you can set those variables in Azure. Mm-hmm. Also, I just hard-coded a port here. When we run this on Azure, we want to make sure we're using the port that the web app wants us to use. So we can also get that from as an environment variable. It might be all caps, so I'll put both just to be safe. And the reason I'm putting these ORs is if this isn't defined, we want it to fall through to 3978. So I can actually still run this locally, and I don't even have to define a port. If I don't define a port, it'll use 3978. So now we're using those environment variables. Let's go ahead over to the Git tab and stage these changes. And I'll put a commit message. This is our initial hello bot. Make that commit and push those up to GitHub. And switching back here, before we actually deploy the bot, let's see how to set those environment variables. So if I scroll down to application settings, and then in there go to app settings, you'll see a section where you can put key value pairs for your environment variables. You can see I've already put the Microsoft App ID and Microsoft App password here. Mm-hmm. And you can put whatever environment variables you need here. Those are just the two I need for the Hello Bot. Once you have those set, you can go to deployment options to actually set up automatic deployment for your bot. For the source, I'm going to choose GitHub. That's where our bot lives right now. And it'll ask you to authenticate your GitHub account and also ask you which project and which branch you want to deploy. I've already authenticated my account, so I'm going to skip that step. And for the project, I'll choose Hello Bot. And the master branch is fine. So I'll hit OK. Now, while that deploys, I'm going to switch over to the bot framework portal and just explain what I've done here. I've gone ahead and registered our Hello Bot, and registering essentially means it's given me an app ID and an app password that I can use. So that's where I was getting the Microsoft app ID and password in the environment variables. And I've also told it where my bot is going to live. So it's going to be at hellobotsample.azurewebsites.net, and I've given it the route /API/messages. So let's see if that deployment succeeded. If I go here, we see that we got a check mark. Initial hello bot is the commit we just made. So our bot is now live on Azure.
Great.
So if I switch over here, I'll hit test just to make sure that connection is right and I got the URL correct and everything. And it should come back and tell me accepted. Great. So our bot is connected. Bot Framework Portal actually has a web chat client that I can use to really quickly talk to my bot. So I can say hello here. And just like before, my bot should just come back and say, hello world. And it behaves just as it did before. So now we have a very simple bot, but it's running live on Azure. And to demonstrate the continuous deployment, let's go back to Visual Studio Code. And let's extend this a little bit. So instead of just saying hello world, let's make it a little more personal. So I've gone ahead and created a simple dialogue to ask for what the name is. Let's step through this really quick. Again, I'm defining a root dialogue. But instead of just giving one function, I'm actually going to give an array of functions. And in Bot Framework, this is called a waterfall dialogue. The reason is because the first message the user sends will trigger this function. And we'll use a built-in text prompt in Bot Builder to ask the user what their name is. Once the user replies with their name, it'll fall through to the second function, and we can access the what the user said through the result variable. So you can see I'm grabbing their name from result.response and sending them a more personalized greeting, so hello and then their name. So now that I've made that change, let's commit that as well. So I'll say ask user for name, make that commit, and push that to GitHub. Once that's done committing, if you switch back to the Azure portal, and let's just refresh that tab, we'll see that it has automatically triggered the deployment for the commit we just made. So I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to refresh the portal or do anything like that. It's automatically triggered that deployment.
What you could do with live code is to use a development branch and then only merge from the dev branch to the production branch when you want to deploy and set up the automatic deploy from the production branch to Azure.
Yep. Actually, so when I deployed, I just left it at master because I just have one branch in my simple project.
So because you don't want your production environment to update every time a dev does it.
Right. Of course. Get all those bugs in there. So you can see we have a green check here now, so it's been deployed. And I can just go back here. I don't have to refresh or anything because this is just communicating with my bot live. So I'll say hello again. And we should get slightly different behavior where our bot now asks me, maybe, what is your name? And I can say Nafis. And it should say, hello, Nafis.
Great.
And of course, the bot still isn't that smart. If I say hello again, it doesn't remember my name. It'll ask me again. And I can say, hey, my name's Etienne now.
You can lie, too.
Yeah, I just did. My name's not Etienne.
So it's a bot with memory issues.
Yes. And you can use state management inside Bot Framework to do that, but we won't go that far.
Sure.
So there you have it, a bot that's running live on Azure and set up with continuous deployment. Now that we got a simple bot running, let's take it one step further. A common task you want to do in Node is calling an API, so we'll show you how to do that from Node. There's a module called Request that you can use, and it's a very popular module for making requests, calling different APIs. You can call APIs using the HTTP module that Etienne was showing before, but it's not nearly as easy as using the request module. So we can see, again, how a third-party module can make our development job a lot easier. Specifically for this bot, we're going to call the Marvel API. So this will be a bot that the user can ask, you know, tell me about Captain America. And the bot will come back and give basic information like a description, a nice picture, and also a link to show more information if the user wants it. So let's get into the code. So I'm back in Visual Studio Code now with a new project called MarvelBot. And I've run npm init already, so we don't have to worry about that. We've been doing all of our code inside one file, but let's show you how to split your project up into multiple files. So I'll write the logic that calls the Marvel API in a separate file called marvelhelper.js. So in this file, we want to use the request module to make our request. So let's bring that in. Do that as we did before with the other modules. And I'm going to bring in another module too called crypto, which I need to make a hash, but you don't need to do this. I just need to do this because the Marble API requires a specific hash. So I'll bring that in. And let's go ahead and npm install those two. So I can put both of them in one command. While it's doing those, we can move on. So the main point of this file will be to get the information for a superhero. So let's make a function called getCharacterInfo. And this function will take a parameter called name, which is just the name of the superhero, a string that'll be Captain America or whatever superhero we want. And it'll also take a callback. The reason we want to take a callback function in getCharacterInfo is because this function will run asynchronously. The reason is because the call to the API, it might take half a second, it might take 3 seconds, we don't really know. We want our code to keep running regardless of whether the API call is still being made. So when we call the API using the request module, we can't actually return the character from the function. We need to wait until that's done, and after the request is done, we'll call the callback, and the callback will take a parameter, which is the character that we've retrieved. So the first thing we want to do is get all of the information that we need to pass to the API. So I've added that in these four variables. This is specific to the Marvel API, so your API, you may need to do different things. But I'm basically just getting the current timestamp and getting my Marvel API keys from the environment variable and creating this hash. The next thing we'll do is create an options object, which will hold a lot of these parameters that we want to send to the API. So the API will need to, or the request will need to know the URL for the API. So we'll insert the Marvel URL here. And we also want to pass some query string parameters. So we'll do that using an object inside here called QS. For the Marvel API, we'll pass the timestamp as TS. We'll pass the name of the superhero, which we got as a parameter to this function called name. We'll pass the API key, which I have up there as public key, and the hash that I've created. So those are all the options that we're going to pass to the API. Now that we have that, we can actually use request to make that call. So I'm going to use request.get, and get will take a parameter, which is options. That's how it'll know what URL to hit and what parameters to use. And it'll also take a callback. And it's a similar reasoning to before. We don't know when this call will actually finish. When it does finish, our callback will be called, and we'll have all the information about the results of that request. So this function will take a few parameters. First is error, which if there was some kind of problem with making that API call, we can check error to see what error it was. Second is message, which is essentially the response from the API call. And the third is body. So in message, we can use to get the headers for the response and also the status code, and the body is the actual body of the response. So in this function, the first thing we want to do is make sure there wasn't an error. So I'll say if error, then there's no way for us to get a valid character, so we'll just call the callback that the caller provided to us. And I should note what we expect this callback to be. So let's put this in a comment. Our callback should take an error as the first parameter in case there was an error, and we'll also take a second parameter that's the character. So when we call our callback, and there was an error, we'll provide that error as the first parameter. And there wasn't a valid character, so I could put null as the character, but if I just leave that out, it has the same effect. So I'll just say callback with an error. And that's all we can do for this function, so we'll just return from there. So if there was an error, call the callback, pass that error through, and return. Even if there wasn't an error, it's possible that the status code we got is bad. We expect a 200, but if we don't get a 200, we want to fail. So I'll make sure that the status code in message is actually equal to 200. So if it's not equal to 200, we'll do a similar thing. We'll call our callback, and we don't have really an error here. It's just a bad status code, so I'm going to just pass that status code straight in as the error. And again, we'll return. If we make it this far, we know that there was no error and we got a 200, so we're ready to proceed. At this point, body contains a string with all of our, in JSON format, that has our superheroes that it retrieved. We want this to be a JavaScript object, so we can actually go into the object and see what the characters were. We can do this in one line by just calling json.parse and passing it that string. So now, in that one line, we've gone from the string in JSON to an actual JavaScript object. Now, we should check if we actually got any characters. If the user just typed gibberish that wasn't a valid Marvel character, this might be, we might have gotten a 200 with no error, but there might not actually be a valid character. So let's check if we got any characters. And I know from the API that that's going to be in data.count. So we're going to check that count to see if it's zero. And if it is zero, we can treat this basically as an error. So we'll call the callback. And again, for the error, this time we'll just pass a string that says no characters. And return. Return. If that doesn't happen, we'll assume that there is a character. And we'll just default to using the first character in case there are multiple matches. We'll just use the first one. So I can get that character out of info object through data.results, which is an array. So let's just take the first one. And that's all we have to do. So now we're ready to call the callback. And there was no error this time. So finally, we can pass null for the error. And the second parameter, if you remember, is the actual character. So we'll go and pass our character here. And that should be our entire function for retrieving Marvel Superhero. One more thing we need to do in this file is actually expose this function to the outside world. So this function only exists in this file currently. There's no way to access it from our main server.js file that we're going to write in a second. In order to expose this, we use an object in Node called exports. So what I can do is put a function in here, and I'll call it getCharacterInfo. And we're going to set that equal to the function we just created is getCharacterInfo. What this is doing is exports is a object that Node gives you in all of your JS files that you can use to expose any variables or functions in your file to the outside world. And I'll show you how that works using the require statement in a second. I called these both getCharacterInfo, so that might be confusing. Just to clarify, I could have called this getHero or getInfo or whatever I want. This is the name that the outside world is going to use to call this function. This needs to be getCharacterInfo because that's what I called my function in this file. So I'm basically taking that function and putting it into this exports object. But just to be consistent, I'm going to leave this as getCharacterInfo.
So it's easy to access an API.
Yes.
You do that in 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's very easy. Most of this code was error handling. So make sure we didn't have an error, make sure we got a 200, and so on. But after that's all done, parsing it as JSON was really easy. And going
just
in and getting that.
Yeah,
just returning that using a callback. So we have that exported now. Let's go ahead and create our main file that we called server.js. And in order to use our Marvel helper file, we'll use a require statement again. Instead of giving it just a module name, I'll give it a relative path to the file we just did. It's in the same directory, so I'll just say ./marvelhelper.js. And this will bring in the file that we just made. What's actually happening here is this require function is returning the exports object from Marvel Helper. So when I say, since I put getCharacterInfo inside exports, we can now access getCharacterInfo from Marvel. So when I'm ready to call that function, I'll be able to do marvel.getCharacterInfo and call that function. So really easy to bring in that file. Before we do that, we need to do all the server and bot setup that we did before. So I'll bring that in really quick. And that was a lot of code, but if you look closely, this is nothing new. This is exactly what we were doing before. So we're setting up the server, creating the bot, routing those messages to the bot, and defining our root dialog. And before I forget, let's go ahead and npm install the Restify and Bot Builder modules, since we hadn't done that for this project yet. Mm-hmm. And so now that that's done, the root dialog does look a little bit different than the hello bot, but that's expected because it's a different bot with different behavior. So let's go through this flow really quickly. There are two paths our bot will take. The first is if the user said something containing hello or hi, we'll assume they're just greeting the bot, and we'll send back a greeting saying, hello, I'm the Marvel bot, you can ask me details for a superhero. If their message did not contain hello or hi, then we'll assume they want to get info about a hero. So I'm going to use session.beginDialogue to switch to a different dialogue. And this is where you can see the whole modular aspect of Bot Framework coming into play. I can separate my dialogues and reuse them later. So I'm going to call my dialogue getInfo, and I define the getInfo dialogue down here. So when I'm in the getInfo dialogue, again, I'm using the built-in text prompt to ask the user which character they're interested in. This is pretty much the exact same as when I was asking the user for their name, but instead I'm asking them which character they want. And after I get the character, the waterfall dialogue will fall down into the second function, and I can access the name of the superhero again through results.response. So now that I have the superhero name, I'm ready to call the function we just wrote to get a character. So I'll say get character info, and that function takes the first parameter is the superhero name, and the second parameter is the callback function that it'll call after it's done getting a character. So if you remember, that callback function takes two parameters, an error, in case there was an error, and then a character, which if there wasn't an error, we'll get a character back in that object. Again, the first thing we want to do here is check and make sure there wasn't an error. So if there is an error, or if for whatever reason the character we get is undefined or null, you know, bad value, then we want to end the session immediately. So we'll say end dialogue, and we can pass a message back to the user saying, you know, sorry, I couldn't get info for that bot, just so they know something went wrong and they're not just sitting and waiting for a response. And after I end the dialogue, I don't want to do anything else in that function, so I'll just return. Otherwise, if I get here, that means I did successfully get a character, so I want to present that information in the form of a nice visual card and send that to the user. So I have that code here, and that's also quite a bit of code, but let's go over this. It's not doing anything too complicated. We're going into the character object and pulling out the name, the description, the URL to the image, and we're taking those and using Bot Builder's built-in feature called Hero Card to create a nice looking card. Once we've created that card, we create a message and attach that hero card to the message. Now that we have a message created, the only thing we have left to do is call session.endDialogue, and we can pass that message in. And that should be everything we need to do for our bot. One thing to note before we run this, in our Marvel helper, I've used a couple of environment variables here for Marvel public key and Marvel private key, my API keys. We were running this in Azure before. Let's run this locally, and I'll show you how you can set environment variables from VS Code when you're running from VS Code. So if I hit, if I go to debug and hit run, it'll ask me for my environment. And this is the launch.json file that Etienne showed before, but before we didn't make any changes. Let's go ahead and make a change now. So one of the fields we can put here is called environment, and this is where you can define your environment variables. So mine are just the Marvel public key and Marvel private key. Now when I launch the Node app through Visual Studio, those environment variables will be available for me to use. So let's go ahead and hit run, and if all goes well, we should see that our bot is running. And I'll go back to the emulator now, and let's create a new conversation so we can not see all this stuff from before. And I'm also going to change my username so that it doesn't call me user one. Now if I say hello to the bot, hopefully we'll get back a greeting message. If I say something that doesn't have hello in it, so if I say, you know, tell me about a superhero, it'll ask me which character I want to know about. What's your favorite superhero, team?
Iron Man.
Iron Man, great. So I'll say, tell me about Iron Man. And it comes back with this nice card.
Cool.
That has a, you know, awesome picture of Iron Man, a short description, and also a button that I've added in the card that if I click on it, should take me to the Marvel.com page for Iron Man where I can learn more about Iron Man. So just for fun, let's do another one. So I can say, you know, tell me about another. And I like the Hulk personally, so let's see what it says about the Hulk. Another nice picture. I've got the description, and the link should take me to the Marvel.com page for the Hulk.
Do you look like him?
Or? I wish I looked like him. I've been working out, so hopefully I'll get there. I'll get there soon. Great, so we have a Marvel bot running locally. If you wanted to run this on Azure, you could follow similar steps that we did for the Hello bot, but there you have it. Simple way to call an API.
Great, so calling an API, using JSON file, and using a complex SDK, everything seems to be easy there.
Pretty easy, yeah.
So now we've seen simple stuff, complex, more advanced stuff in Node.js in code, and maybe you're wondering where or what you can look right now after this video is ending and how you can improve yourself or learn new stuff. And we're going to go through different elements there that you can use as a starting point. The first one is that we showed you some modules here. Nafis showed you some of them too, the Restify, the Bot Builder, but there is really, really a huge amount of them. Sometimes there is too much of them. When you want to do something, you have 2, 3, 10, 20 different ways of doing it. And could be a good idea to just focus on some of them, and then maybe if you want to have some specific behaviors, you can search for more or less common ones. One of the most used is the Express.js. Basically, you showed us, Nafis, the Restify.
Yeah.
That's pretty much for an API. Express is more advanced. You can do APIs, but the basic behavior of this is to be able to create an MVC app, which is Model View Controller app, like more classical websites. Let's say let put it like this. And so there is a lot of them. Like Sockets.io is used to create real-time communication using WebSockets. You have Jade, which is now named Pug, which is a template engine, and that's the one you have by default in Express to template your web pages, and you can access database, of course, and all that kind of stuff. And you used requests, right? That's the last one here. It's the equivalent of XHR, but in the server side.
Right.
And you have a lot of them. I use XHR too most of the time, but people tend to prefer this one. So that can be a good idea to have a look at this. So what you can also consider is not writing your code using JavaScript directly, because one of the things that you might not really know when you're not really used to JavaScript is that ECMAScript, so that's the standard behind JavaScript, is where the specification is at right now, and there is what the real world can handle. And you have a difference between so let's say that was in 2015. We had the green line here. It was the state of the art of the specification at that time, and that was where the server side were and the web front, so in the browser was. It's really really behind a lot of time, and so you have a huge gap between what you would like to do as a developer, because you have all these new stuff that are defined, and what you need to target, and so that can be complicated. And it's never going to reduce this gap, because while the specification are advancing and are going further, the real world state of the front and the server is not going to go faster. So you will always have this gap, and you have a lot of different ways of being able to create using all the new cool stuff and then being able to run in the real world. You have Ember.js, for instance, that you can use to create future JavaScript, but really plain JavaScript, and then be able to run that on older browser or older Node.js versions, for instance. And but you can also use TypeScript. And TypeScript, the idea is that you will be able to write codes using the object-oriented programming behavior and everything that you can expect here. So it's good if you come from .NET or Java, for instance. And you can see here on the left that you can create a class. You can also use constructor, which is not even inside the JavaScript definition, and then it's going to generate on the right the correct JavaScript code for this. And this is the equivalent for ECMAScript 5 here on the right, but you can also then generate directly ECMAScript 6 when it's going to be handled everywhere, and then you can just play with that. So the idea is really you write using all the great tools in TypeScript, then you generate a correct version of JavaScript that can run when you where you want to run that, and you're good to go. That's pretty much the idea. So you can go there, typescriptlang.org, and just have a look at it. You have a playground to start and try to use that. You can also use Volon.js, which is a tool that is created by people inside of TED, actually, the team we are working on. And you can use that to debug web fronts, obviously, but you can also use that to debug Node.js. You can debug Express, for instance. We have a plugin we're working on to be able to debug Bot framework using Bot Builder. And so just have a look at it. It can be can save your life to be able to remote debug something. And that's pretty much it. So we learned, or you learned maybe a lot of different things, that Node.js is really popular and it's a good idea to have a look at it, even if you don't want to use that into production or for some of your projects. And it's not only for backend. You have NPM, that it's the huge community repository where you can find a lot of code and modules or libraries that you can reuse. And just I think that the idea is really now you can just start coding and have fun.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I think that's really great. So thank you. You can here have access to all the resources. You have access to the samples also and on GitHub too. All the codes that we showed today or in this session, you can access that here.
Yep.
And you have access to everything, Bot framework, npmjs.org, etc.
Yeah, so thank you for joining us, everybody. I hope you guys learned a lot about Node, and we definitely encourage you to go out and try this stuff. It's really cool.
Sure, see you.
See you.